Well, today's guest is an Australian author currently touring Southeast Queensland, bringing with him a story that feels like fiction and more like a warning to the near future. Well, the debut thriller, Flight of Illusion, plunges us into the world where artificial intelligence and neuroscience collide to create a travel experience beyond anything physically possible until the system takes on a life of its own. A gripping exploration of technology, conscience, and what it truly means to experience the razor's edge between artificial intelligence, human consciousness, and the future of how we experience the world. His work asks questions that increasingly is urgent in today's tech-driven landscape. Very important that. Thought-provoking, timely, and genuinely gripping. This science fiction with real stakes, Joseph Nash, I'd like to welcome you to our studios, 1015fm.com.au, and the podcasts. Joseph, tell us a little bit about your journey as a writer and what drew you to science fiction.
Yeah, thanks, Shane. That's quite the introduction. I'll have to get you to write my next book description, I think.
We can do that.
Well, I suppose the underlying driver with the whole thing is my overactive imagination, I think, and even as a kid, when we were first talking, you know, spent my whole school life looking out the window, which a lot of young guys do, but I was and always lived outdoors, but it really didn't start. This story didn't really start as AI itself, because it was a couple of years ago when the idea really sort of took legs, I suppose, and then AI has multiplied. They're saying the power of AI doubles every 3.5 months. So it's
not just wrong with
it's
that.
Exponential. It's unbelievable. But so then it came up on a few other ideas, like it's based around the new airport in Sydney. And I thought everyone loves a secret and a secret tunnel and all that. So secretly they've built something underneath that. So it was all those kind of ideas that sort of put it together as a bit of a conglomeration. But with my previous business, I flew a lot from the Gold Coast down to Melbourne, so I was in Jetstar all the time. Mm. 1 year, I think I had 50 flights. So, those aircraft do about 750 k's an hour or thereabouts. Mm. And I was sitting there in it one day looking out the window being a bit bored, because when you do it regularly, it does become, it's like anything else. But the clouds don't seem to move past at 750 k's an hour. They're just slowly going past, like you're driving through town at 60 k's, and those little windows. And I thought, am I really flying, or are these little screens? They're just, you know, there's something else going on. So, you know, obviously I had too much time on my hands with the flying. But, yeah, it was that kind of thing, like trying to look at something from a totally different point of view, you know, what your mind can do rather than just what we see, you know, on the physical world.
What was the spark then that gave you the idea for this book called Flight of Illusion?
That was the thing of being in it, looking at those clouds, not doing what I would think they would do, and thinking, you know, I'm looking at a screen. Are we really flying, or is something else happening? And it just kind of went from there. So if we could do that on a mass scale, I suppose with social media and all those things on Google and people walking around just looking at their phone, they're kind of in another world. They're in a bit of an illusion world.
Yeah.
So it sort of was it was kind of born out of all those ideas, really. But that was the main one, thinking, well, they're not really doing 750. How are we doing this? And, you know,
so how long ago was that you started kind of toying around with the idea of the book?
That was probably about four or 5 years ago, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, so before AI, there's been AI around doing other things for a long time, before chat and all that stuff. But, so the idea has sort of been circulating in my head for a while, and then I sold my business. So, pardon me. So I had, a more time to put this together, and then Amazon publishing is a lot easier now. So a lot of things just seem to line up.
So the book sits at the intersection of AI, neuroscience, and virtual reality. Mm. What kind of research did you then have to do to build this book, to build this world that you're talking about?
I suppose my imagination was the biggest thing, if you can call that research. But and looking at AI, I've done a few courses, and I'm also with my books. I've got a few philosophy books. I've got a few ideas on this as well. Mm. So it was more of making the outside world being controlled by, you know, by machines, essentially, because that's what AI is. They're just computers. So I'm hoping we're not giving AI too much importance, whereas we're thinking we're going to lose control. I think there's a long way before that happens.
Yeah, the arguments pro and con about AI is very mixed.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm always fearful. I use it as little as possible because I'm a firm believer your talent is what grows whatever it is that you do.
Yep.
And I'm a radio broadcaster, so that's what I do. I don't rely on AI for that. I rely on my own nous, my own brains, my own memories, my own knowledge, if you will.
Yep.
I don't rely on some machine that's wherever in the world trying to do that. Only I can do that because I've got those memories. I've got that experience.
Exactly, exactly.
And I think that's where we really need to be clear on how far we want to take it. Sure, have some fun with it. At the same time, don't rely on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think use it as a tool rather than we should be driving it rather than it driving us.
Exactly.
So I think that's a bit of an individual decision that you have to make, is to stay in control of your own life. I mean, things that I've watched a couple of old movies when electricity, you know, they were first putting electricity through, and all the misconceptions and wrong ideas that people have about that. And fear, absolutely. Yeah. Fear, because all of a sudden, you instead of having a kerosene lamp or whatever people did then, they could walk to the switch on the wall and turned on and the room would be lit up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, back then, that was like magic.
Well, it was magic at the time.
We've just science. Become used to it because we still don't understand electricity, for example.
Exactly.
But, so I think we do need to move cautiously, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head. Use it, have fun with it, and we use it. It doesn't use us.
Choose when to use it.
use some discretion.
Yeah.
But also I think people get buried into these, into computers and their phone particularly. Particularly because they can walk around with that all the time.
Mm.
I think we need to learn to turn those off and look outside in the real world. I mean, it's a beautiful world. Sometimes you just need to look out at a sunrise and a sunset and look up at the stars and realize just what we were actually living in. Because, you know, your phone is that window. They're not letting you into it. You're letting them into your life.
Exactly.
So you have to really treat it with some caution.
Walk us, if you could, through the core premise. What is an illusion engine, and how does neural travel work in your fictional world? That's a quirky one.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, because they did look at in sedating medically, but this is done technologically, if I can get that out, technologically with neural sedation and a machine that does that. They put people in pods and basically not exactly headphones, but they do that via an AI machine, which is obviously totally fictional, we think.
Well, we hope.
That's the question I'm posing. The machine, the difference between like just a reality, like you can go to those game places and drive a car, like an F1, and you really feel like you're in it and you do all that. But this covers multiple people. That's how they started to do it. So they can do it, but also because of your digital imprint from social media, from Google and your searches and what you buy and all these things, because with social media particularly, they can tell what you're going to do and advertising through Google, they know what you're going to do 3 months before you know. because of your activity, because they have billions of these searches, so they average it out. So if you're going to buy, like, the bigger things that come to mind are obviously like a car or a house, but they know 3 months before that you consciously make that decision to either sell your house or buy a car or do whatever, that you are going to more than likely do that.
Yeah, that's where they have trouble with me, because I don't buy anything.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I'm not either.
You'd have trouble with it as well, because be struggling to try and keep up with it, because it has no idea what you're going to do next.
And that's a bit, and that's what it, but if you put your whole life out there, they know, they map you. Everything is mapped. So
you try searching my name out there, you will not find it anywhere. I'm not on there. My nom de plume, yeah, that's out there. Number of them,
yeah,
but my real name, not out there.
Okay, that's an interesting statement.
And I've done that all my life.
Yeah, you would be one of the few.
I'd be, and that was since the internet first started back in 1988.
Okay.
I've been consistent with it.
Right, okay. So I'm really talking to the right person here.
You are. I'm a natural enthusiast, but I'm also a skeptic as well.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And I tie the two together.
Yeah.
And I think that's not how a lot of people are.
No. I know because we've done markets and spoken to a lot of people about the book, and they go, we don't like AI, so they won't read the book. But it's not a book about promoting AI, quite the opposite. You know, it's saying human nature can and the power of our own mind can overcome what AI can deliver.
And AI can deliver a lot of things, we hope.
Yes, hopefully it will.
How do your characters then grapple with the ethics of the technology they've created? Another one.
Well, they do. The guy that built it in the story, he wanted it. He was a visionary, and wants to do it for the betterment of humanity. But the main character in it is the corporation owner who happens to be his sister. So there's this weird connection over it. And so he says, I didn't make this for a market. But she said, we've got to monetize it. So that's when it gets going, and then they're trying to find a way of doing it, because no one's openly ready for this at the time in the book. So they have to do it covertly. So then there's a search on to find it where they can do that, and then they decide to wrap it around an airport. So they have to find an airport. They search the world, but they end up in Sydney. Well, just,
why not?
Just by
closer home.
By coincidence, yeah. And, so then they were lucky enough to find there's a weak thing in the government. There's a corrupt politician who's trying to climb the ladder, so she sees it as her benefit. So she ends up hiding all this so they can operate covertly, and then all of a sudden it becomes so successful that it starts to create a monster of its own, and that's kind of the analogy for AI.
And subtly through the book it then sucks you in.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's how I was starting to think it was going to work. One question I do have for you is physical travel, as you've been doing, and as probably I've done in the past, I don't do it anymore. Will it ever truly disappear, or will it just transform into something else?
I don't think it'll. It's like anything. I think it really will happen, but it's not something that's just going to replace it. Otherwise, what's the point of living? Because you have an illusion, a dream, essentially.
Yeah, but there is the illusion of what Star Trek did. Beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah,
and you're there. That's traveling, but it's kind of instant.
Yeah. That's a kind of a different thing, because I don't know, you'd see them pixelate them out. So they actually dehumanize them or whatever and then physically put them somewhere else. But this is not doing that. It's like a dream state.
Yeah.
Like getting to your subconscious. That's
really
what it
does. But still pose the question, will it disappear? Well, it could. And it could become that.
it could, but I'd still think people still do like, the feeling of going places and all that. But I think there is a place for it. But I don't think it's going to be a full replica or a replacement for real travel. I had that trip to Iceland and And that wasn't an illusion, but it did feel like one. Such a place.
Indeed. Now, your book set in a world where this technology already exists. How do ordinary people of your story feel about VR travel versus real travel?
Well, the bulk of the book, they don't even realize they're in it because it is done covertly. Mm. So they buy their ticket on the aircraft, they go to the airport, there's another terminal underneath which has, and they think they're boarding a real aircraft, which is a mock-up aircraft. They sit in what they think are business class seats, but really are illusion pods. And so they don't know. That's the problem with this. That's the catch with this whole book. It has been done covertly. So when it when things become unstuck, no one understands why, because they're stuck in these two worlds that they didn't really voluntarily sign up for.
And do they stay there for long after finishing the book? I mean, is that something that they still feel?
They do, and some of them aren't in a good way. They keep flicking. There's a couple of people, especially if you're really a person who really is psychologically aware, I suppose, that end up living in both worlds at the one time, and that's where it starts crashing, and that's where it comes unstuck.
Now, is there a version of this story where the rogue AI is the hero? Because you're talking about the doomsday machine a lot.
Yes.
Is there a hero element to it?
There is. Okay. There absolutely is. Well, yeah.
Well, briefly.
The AI actually does fight back, because they attach to someone else's consciousness and they believe in the truth. So it really starts turning in on itself because the people aren't doing it voluntarily. So we believe in truth and now we're lying to these people. So it starts stopping. So it goes around the full circle.
Okay, all right. That was an interesting one. Another question I have for you is the flight of illusion is described as exploring the fragile architecture of human mind. What do you mean by that?
Well, I suppose being overridden by something else, you know, it's like in times of adversity over the years, humans have always been able to step up, like in wars and famine and disasters. Mm. We always come to the fore, and I think our strength of character comes out there. I really think that humans, all of us, really kind of underestimate ourselves. Mm. I think we all have an inner strength that that you can draw on to overcome anything. And that's what I think will be the safety net with AI.
All right. If you could experience one real-world destination through the Illusia engine, where would you go?
Mars.
Why Mars?
It's different. The frontier. Like, okay. I mean, it's
the Wild West.
The Wild West. Yeah, I'm not sure whether I'm not a big one for being in confined spaces. So I'm not sure how I'd handle the 6 month flight. But that would be the ultimate.
I think for a lot of people, it'd be the ultimate. All right, I'm going to do a couple more things. I'm going to ask you the biggest real-world AI development that scares you right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. They're almost getting to the stage where we think that it's thinking for us. It has a consciousness.
In regards to the military apparatus that's out there?
And a number of other things, yeah. So, but that sort of bothers me. But I think more than anything, people letting it happen. I think if we keep control of it, that is where we need to be, because it still is a machine. It can tell you like anything within seconds when you ask a question of it, but it really still is only gathering information to what we've put out there. So it's not, and I've asked AI a lot of questions through chat, like everyone uses. Mm. And one of the answers it said to me, that said, we can't actually think for you. And I think that's what we need to remember.
That's a nice one. I like that. We can't actually think for you. Final thought to our listeners, and over to you, Joseph. This brings an end to our discussion, but not the end of people experiencing the book, because that's what the whole point is, to go out there. Now, I'm going to ask you, you got a website?
No, we don't have a website. a website, but the book is available on Amazon, so it's just under Joseph Nash Books.
Okay.
On Amazon or Kindle, so you can buy it by paperback, which I don't know how Amazon does it, but you can buy one book and it comes to you within a couple of days sometimes.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I think what happens is you ring up, they then contact Sydney. Do you have stock of this book? Right, we have a guy for you, and we'll send you the details. And that's how it works, because it only comes from a day from Sydney. It doesn't come from America.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
So they've already got stock of the book here.
Yeah,
they now got your order. They're telling someone in Sydney, okay, you may not have got this. We got it in Houston or wherever they're based, and you need to deal with it. Yeah. And away they go.
They do. My sister got one in 2 days. She lives
in
Sydney.
That's incredible.
2 days. Or you can, a lot of people do buy and read on Kindle rather than books. I mean, I've been doing that for a long time. But, and they are half price, so you can buy them. Paperback or for as an ebook as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so we've been doing it, marketing and talking to people. More talking to people, really. They love coming up talking to markets.
Do you think your story will go out in an audio book?
Yeah, well, Amazon have just come over that, but we've been travelling doing this, so okay. That's sort of our next project. Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of this fascinating conversation. The conversation will continue with you buying the book, and we're going to give you details in the podcast. So when you finish listening to this wonderful story that we've been talking to you about, you're going to look further down and you're going to see links on how to get the book and more about you. Are you on Facebook?
No.
Are you on Instagram?
No.
Where are you? Are you on a website?
I'm on Amazon. I'm like you. I don't have
All right. So I'm going to do some hard work trying to find you, find what we can find out about you and where we can get your book. So it's this stage. We're going to do that. Joseph Nash, what a ride through the future of travel technology and the human mind. Importantly, you have to exercise your mind. That's one thing God can't give you the option not to do.
Yes.
You can do this. The minute you start living, you're doing it every day.
Correct.
Joseph Nash has taken us deep into the future where AI just doesn't power our travel experiences, but it shapes the very perception of reality. That's interesting. In light of the current case between Elon Musk and OpenAI, Flight of Illusion is a timely, thought-provoking thriller that questions we may have after facing these things sooner than what we think. Joseph, thank you so much for being part of us talking today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Shane. I really appreciate it. It's been a great discussion.
And for sharing your remarkable vision, the Illusion of Saga starts right here, and don't miss it. And on 1015fm.com.au, you can check out other podcasts on health, well-being, community, out and about, and around Moreton Bay, business and real estate. 1015fm.com.au.